welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Turn the Page, the Syosset Library podcast. This is Barney Leventino, and I am joined today by first-time author, Tony Roth.
I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. Your book, the new book, is called Trigger Point, published on March 1st. It'll be out. And again, you are a first-time author. So let's talk a little bit about the book.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited about it. I wrote it. Originally, it was about 113,000 words. I wrote every word in less than 90 days during the beginning of COVID in 2020. And so it's a flashback of a lot of bar talk and memories. It's a collage of myself and lots of characters within the CIA, within the State Department, all throughout Central Latin America in the mid to late 80s. During the Nicaraguan freedom fighter era, and lots of money movements from Congress to the arms, and lots of shady characters in between. So it's a fun ride.
It was. The book was fun. And the setting and the location. You know, I read a lot of books in this genre. And typically we find these spy thrillers are set in Europe, in Asia, in the Middle East. Not that many in Central and South America. So why there and why this particular subject? And I'll add a little bit further. I'm of an age when I kind of remember this was all going on, and it was confusing as hell at the time. So again, why there and why then?
Yeah. Well, the book is a historical fiction. It's inspired by true events. So during that era, and I'm 57 going on 58. So I'm from that era. A lot of us who had friends in the service and in the executive branch, in the agency, CIA, FBI, et cetera, we told a lot of bar stories. And so really from the mid to late 80s all the way through probably two decades worth of meeting up with my friends, these stories became more and more embellished. And it got to the point where, after midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, we would be shutting down the bar, and everyone would turn to me and say, "Let Roth tell the story. He's the best storyteller." And of course, I always made them look good. So so at one point about 15 years ago, they said, you should consider writing this all down in a book and tell, make these guys into characters. And so I did. The original title, and for those of you who are interested in some of the characters, there is a CIA recruiter, and his name is Vincent in the book, and he is gay in the mid to late 80s. That's back in the era where it was very, undercover in that part of someone's life. And so he was a man's man, but also had a gay spy partner. And that is part of the historical fiction, if you will, as part of some of the true elements of the characters that the book is based on. And it's so funny that they told me the first title should be How Two Gay Spies Saved Your Life. And that would be Nicholas Ford's life, right? And I couldn't do it. We went round and round and round with all the different titles, and we ended up keeping that as some bylines throughout the book. But we had a lot of fun. It's a great story. I'm hoping, as I'm working on book number two and number three concurrently, that this will turn into a lifelong series and maybe something that'll end up on the screen someday, and we can all fall in love with Nicholas Ford and the people that he runs into and away from in the process.
Nicholas Ford, obviously, he's your central character. He's your protagonist. Talk a little bit about Nicholas. Tell us who he is and how he got to be where he was. And in the book, again, I'm not going to give too many spoilers away, but he's he's operating undercover, and the conflicts internally and externally in his life are interesting to see how he goes about either consciously resolving them or having them resolved for him through circumstance. But let's talk a little bit about, tell us about Nicholas and how he came to be.
Yeah, so Nicholas Ford is a farm boy from the middle of Illinois, down in the heartland area of Springfield, Illinois. And he's a University of Illinois grad, farm boy, agricultural driven. And this is back in the day when most of the recruits for the agency and with regard to field operations or covert or clandestine services came from Yale or some of the other Ivy Leagues. And it was an era of, we want patriots. We want people who are willing to get their hands a little dirty. And this guy fit the mold. He was a straight A student. He was a 4-H Christian County kind of guy right in the middle of nowhere. But he was also a track athlete, a musician, could speak, he took German in high school and then Spanish in college. And he, 2010 vision, great athleticism, and could and had a good, genuine sense of who people are. The problem that happened for Nicholas was he bought into the patriotic recruitment, but his very first mission, and he was part of a task force really, was to launder money that was coming out of Congress, and a lot of immoral acts going on with that money, from guns and ammunitions to support, and who was getting paid off, and how the money was actually moved through cartel organizations in order to make the swaps. That led to a lot of interaction with what I'll call corrupt local officials, corrupt dictators. Everything kind of flowed through Panama back in those days. So you had Noriega in Panama, and then you had Ortega in Nicaragua. Right. And suddenly his morals were being totally abused, and his conscience kicks in because he's always had a close relationship with his father. He couldn't tell anyone what he was doing. And all of a sudden, he began to question who he was turning into. Throughout the book, that becomes really the internal struggle. Some of the enemies are soon to become allies, and some of the allies actually became, potentially an enemy of his conscience. And so it's a twisty-turny book if you really listen to the characters' thought process.
It's interesting. Anytime we read this type of a book where you have a fictional character thrown into the mix with real characters around real events. And again, you're mentioning some of the people just off the top of my head. He's doing business with Fabio Ochoa, Colonel Ramirez, with I don't know if you pronounce it Jaime or Jamie Leal. Some real people who were doing some really bad things at the time. And it kind of had the United States and people like Nick Ford doing business with some of these people. And the personal and political ramifications just continue down the road. I mean, it's not like a one-shot deal with these guys. So it's interesting. Yeah. How for you as an author, how difficult is it to weave your character into these real events?
It was, well, for me, I grew up in that era listening to these stories firsthand. And so I have the advantage of going back in time and hearing a lot of the embellishments and the stories around this. So I was able to take Nick Ford and mold him out of kind of my own being. So what would I do if I was in that situation? And it allowed me to then become very free and tell a really cool fictional story, but through the chronology of what was happening. And I don't want to give a spoiler alert away, but it really does illustrate how the United States government, at least back in those days, could change the narrative almost from week to week, month to month, in order to fit its political agenda.
I don't know if that's really a spoiler. I mean, that's kind of happens all the time.
So, I guess the spoiler is, how does Nick handle it? Right. You know, in the process. So I won't go there, but it's an interesting tale in that regard.
Yeah, you know, as you were talking, you answered another question of mine, and sometimes I speak to authors and I ask them about their characters, and they vehemently deny that they are the character. And you're kind of saying that in a lot of ways, Nick Ford came from you.
Well, it's a collage, you know, it's a collage of characteristics from probably a half a dozen people, really. But the roots, I wanted to make the roots from something I could relate to, because as a first time author, I think it actually made the process easier for me. What's funny about the process is I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, really since the early 90s. And I've done a lot of business writing. So for me, writing a story, I've done some poetry. I did a couple of short stories during college, but my book was so bad. I have to give a shout out to Daniel Roth, who was referred to me by a consultant, Randy Pizer. She said, "Oh, you got to change the structure of your story. You don't know what you're doing." So I sent this 113,000 words to this guy, Daniel Roth, who's at the time was 74. He's going on 75 now. Grew up in Brooklyn. Of course, I am a farm boy from Illinois originally. And he was a editor and publisher with Simon Schuster back when books were really just starting to go to the movies and in the 80s. And so he's been involved with over 1,000 different books being published, lots of playwrights. And he said, "Have you ever heard of the 3X structure?" And I was like, "Well, I've read about it. I don't really know what it means." He said, "Well, you know, you have to, the monkey gets thrown up in the tree. Somebody starts shaking the tree violently and you see if the monkey can hang on or not. Eventually, you got to peacefully get that monkey out of the tree." And he said, "Most of your action plots are built that way." Within about 6 weeks, he took my narrative story and we together, chapter 27 became chapter one, the first kill. And then the reflection of who Nick Ford is and where these characters come from, he helped me reorganize that and it turned into about 80,000 words. And it really made a difference and people wanted to read the story then at that point. So it was a great learning experience. I feel like I got my own, instructional certification now from Daniel Roth in that regard. No relation, by the way.
How many of your bar buddies are going to recognize themselves in your book?
I got the advanced reader copy and I immediately sent it around because I didn't include them in the process. I thought, well, if this is no good, I'm not going to show anyone. But it became, you know, kind of lots of advanced praise from some pretty significant readers. And I said, well, okay. So I ordered extra copies. I immediately sent it out right before the holiday at the year end. And I said, hey, there's a surprise coming. Thank God, 100% of these guys who lived certain parts of this story said, hey, this is awesome. We're proud of you. You did a great job. And then it dawned on me, it's because I actually kept them in a pretty positive light, you know, all the way through. So I took a little bit of the safe road on that. But so far, I've gotten 100% support from everybody on the book, which is great.
How did you end up developing or becoming, on a drinking buddy basis with these people that were, you know, living these lives and doing this stuff? As you said, you're a farm boy and most of these guys weren't. So how did that develop? How did you end up in that circle?
So I was involved in the early days of that recruitment process and met some of them. So that's my introduction to them. And I became friends. And even though we wouldn't talk for 2 years at a time, you know, 3 years, we'd always be checking back in. And then as their careers became more politically oriented, our paths kind of crossed again and we would meet up and have, reunions, parties, you know, whatever was going on. And we stayed friends for 35 plus years now. So it's been a nice friendship.
Some of the supporting characters, you mentioned Vincent, and there are some of the other people involved in the story, particularly the women involved, two women in his life. We have Anna, who's involved with Nicholas, and then we have Gabriella, who's involved with Sean, which is Nicholas's undercover name. How did his relationships with those two women develop, change? Are they altered? What was your approach to them? Well, again, without spoiling the story.
Sure, yeah. This is Anna, a college sweetheart, had a goal with her parents. And it was the thing to, you know, you go to college, you get married, you have a career, then you have some kids. And all of the Midwestern kids that grew up in smaller towns, that was the path that was expected of them. And everyone wanted to, you know, make their parents proud and all that. And I was one of those at the time. And I had an early marriage that did get annulled. And so I blended again my story into that what I'll call character building process for Nick. But he took it to a whole nother level because he went in to service. And back then, believe it or not, the statistics show 44% of covert field agents were actually married. And in fact, they didn't discourage it. They didn't necessarily encourage it. But if there was a reason to be married at the time of recruitment or selection, they didn't stand in the way, they being the CIA. And of course, 88% of those ended in divorce in one form or another. So that didn't help the divorce rate much. Gabriella, on the other hand, was someone who, and I won't spoil alert, he had met in college originally, but really was working with the CIA as an interpreter and a field agent. And she was there, and they immediately bond as I would call them cohorts. They were there to support each other, and they were both physically and emotionally attracted to each other. And so it was very easy for them, being thousands of miles away in a foreign country, to have an affair, if you will. And that's what happens. Now, it becomes an interesting triangle because she is working for the agency. So is the triangle between Anna and Gabriella and Nick, or is it really between Nick, Gabriella, and the agency? And, you know, who's really going to be loyal to who?
Well, the triangle changes several times during the course of the story. Which
I can tell you, every woman that has read the book, and I've had quite a few female readers, and these are avid consumers of these types of stories, every single one has written me back and said, you have to keep Gabriella in the next couple of books, at least, because her character becomes very strong in this book.
Excuse me. Your process in writing, again, as a first-time writer, you mentioned Daniel Roth,
yes.
Who kind of brought it together and kind of edited for you. But your process in terms of the research that you were doing, other than swapping stories in the bars, how did you go about developing really the substance of the story?
Yeah. I took the historical events and I mapped them out almost like an elongated storyboard for a film, if you will. And I took that storyboard and I, over time, had in my own head collected a lot of interesting figures and a lot of interesting stories around those events. So it was pretty fast. I would do this, and I'm an entrepreneur still today and have a couple of companies now. One is a national elder care company. It demands a lot of time, particularly during COVID. But at night, I would look at that storyboard and I could weave in, and I would write 3 to 5 chapters in one night. You know, I was obviously staying up into the early morning hours, but I could see what was happening chronologically around those events. And that made the book feel real to me. And it also allowed me to use a combination of memory and historical facts, you know, to push out, I hope, a really good tale.
Would you say that for your process, again, having the story hanging onto essentially a skeleton of real events and then fleshing it out with your invented characters and working that out versus starting from scratch, developing your own start to finish story, if you will. How do you think the process would be different there, or what would that work for you or not?
I don't even know if it would work for me. I think it would be significantly harder. I love James Bond movies. I love John le Carré books. I love Patterson. I love even Grisham and some of the other guys that just like to write storytelling books, I'll call them. And so for me, I had already done a lot of research on Ian Fleming. And, you know, he took the same approach. He took some of his own experience. He took a collage of other people. And then he took events and tried to always get a major league enemy. You know, that's the Bond formula. Somebody wants the end of the world or to control the world or whatever. In my book, I wanted to go a slightly different direction. I wanted to use that same process, but I really want Nicholas Ford to have an even deeper relationship with the reader and eventually maybe the viewer than say a Jack Ryan or, you know, a Jason Bourne. I want an even richer relationship between this agent who was swept off his feet at the spry age of 21 and thrown into the gusto of Central America with a lot of seasoned military ops, CIA specialists, and I'll say a cadre of a bunch of evildoers, you know, and see what happens. I
asked the question because honestly, I've spoken to a number of nonfiction authors who are very interesting to talk to. I've spoken to a lot of authors who write in this genre as well, but you're the first opportunity I've had to speak to somebody who's writing in this sense, a really a historical fiction spy thriller. So I'm kind of curious as to how the process works versus, you know, sitting down, outlining the story from scratch and going that way. So that for me was interesting to read and to speak to you about that process. Geographically, the story takes place in, aside from some locations in the US, Central South America. Did you do any traveling to check out the locations?
Not during the writing of the book, but I've traveled there throughout my life. Yeah. And so for me, I got to pick the restaurants that we would meet up at and explain where these neighborhoods were. It really became a Bermuda Triangle toward the end of, you know, Bogota and surrounding Medellin and those kinds of places for, you know, covert airstrips, things like that. But then a lot in the Panama airport, which is it used to be called the Fun Zone, which was Hangar 63. And that's where the CIA actually owned that hangar back in the 80s. And that's where a lot of exchanges would happen and some conflict. And then ultimately, you know, the end objective was to keep a positive narrative around President Reagan's, freedom fighters and convincing Ortega not to continue down this socialistic path. And so the pressure was to really make President Reagan's staff happy with some outcome. And through the book, you're not sure what that's going to be. And so Nicholas Ford was just praying at one point, I'm pretty sure, in the book.
So you mentioned that you're already at work on books two, and I think you said book three simultaneously.
Yes.
Without giving much away, I'm assuming Nicholas's story is going to kind of continue in the same geographical arena, or will things be different for him down the road?
Yeah. For the next two books, it's Central and Latin America. And you can imagine every book, I want to have it to be standalone. So if you happen to pick up book two or book three first, you may want to go back and see how did this all evolve. But I'd like each story to be in and of itself. Obviously, book two is going to be centered around the invasion and the removal and the ultimate conflicts with Noriega. and what was happening behind the scenes during all of that conflict and how politicized it became. So there's a lot of interesting stories around that whole moment in time. And I think anyone who likes book one is probably going to love book two, because I'm being told already that my second attempt at writing a book is going much smoother and much faster. My dialogue improves, and all of my arc improves, and my, you know, threads of character development are improving. So I'd love to be doing this. You know, I'd love to do this for the rest of my life. Quite frankly, I've fallen in love with it.
The ride gets smoother and faster after the training wheels come off, right?
Exactly. True.
It was a fun book to read. For our listeners, the title again is Trigger Point. The author is Tony Roth, and it will be released on the 1st of March. And any time frame for books two or three?
I'm hoping book two will be fall of this year, and book three would be as early as January. Okay. So that's kind of the goal dates as we
Very
see
good.
It.
We will look forward to that. Good luck with this one, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk down the road when the next entry comes out.
Fantastic. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. And with that, we will turn the page on this chapter of our podcast, and we look forward to seeing you down the road. Tony, good luck. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.